The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 2, text number 67, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on July 5th, 2008, in Atlanta, Georgia, USA.
So I have chosen a very special verse to speak on tonight. This is Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 2, text number 67. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Indriyanam hi charatam, yanmano nuvadiyate, tadasya harati pragyam, vairnavam ivambasi.
Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Tri Dandi Go Shami Maharaj Prabhupada. As a strong wind sweeps away a boat on the water, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Purport. Unless all of the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, even one of them engaged in sense gratification can deviate the devotee from the path of transcendental advancement. As mentioned in the life of Maharaj Ambarish, all of the senses must be engaged in Krishna consciousness, for that is the correct technique for controlling the mind.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha.
How does Krishna describe the senses? Roaming. The senses go wandering here and there, you see, looking for objects of gratification. All it takes is one sense to get locked into sense gratification to completely destroy the intelligence. Therefore, the devotee, he learns how to become Goswami. Go means the senses, and Swami means master. We give that title to sannyasis, you see, Goswami, because they are supposed to have their senses under control, you see. But is that the only class of persons in the Vedic culture who are Goswami? In Vedic culture, everyone is meant to be Goswami. Those who are not Goswami, they are outside of the human category, actually. They're considered subhumans. Nowadays, the more you become a servant of the senses, they consider you're great, you see. It is just the opposite in the modern-day society. The more you become a rogue and a rascal, they celebrate, oh, he's great. You see, he's like these Bollywood movie stars, you know, so many illicit things, but they're celebrated as great heroes, you see. You know, the Hollywood, same thing. Hollywood, Bollywood, the same disease. Sense gratification. But that is not actual human life. Human life means to bring the senses under control. Just consider the example given by Sri Krishna here in this most perfect, wonderful verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Just imagine, sometimes it happens, just like that hurricane that came to New Orleans a few years ago. So many boats were just completely swept away, you see. Even big boats were swept away. So, our intelligence is compared to a boat. In a strong wind, it can completely steal away the intelligence, the boat, you see. So that strong wind is the wind of sense desire, the desire to gratify the senses. So how does one conquer? Desire is a natural thing. Everybody desires. The Buddhists try to kill desire, but actually they desire to kill desire. So they don't actually stop desiring. So what is the solution? The solution is you desire in a spiritual way. Don't try to stop desire, but you spiritualize your desires. That's the key. Just like everyone likes to hear some nice sound vibration, some interesting talks, some nice music, everyone likes. So, if we can't do that in relationship with Krishna, you see, then it becomes perfect. If you can become attracted to hearing the topics of the Lord and the kirtan of the Lord instead of some mundane talks or some mundane music, then your desire for interesting talks and your desire for attractive music is satisfied in such a way that your intelligence is not carried away by material desire, you see. Your consciousness becomes elevated in that way. Therefore, it's described in chapter number 10, text number 9. Much chitta madgata prana bodhiyantak parasparam katayantashtamam yatyam tashantacha vramantacha. Krishna says, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered unto me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss, enlightening one another and conversing about me. So it is not something dry. It is very sweet, it is very relishable, it is the ultimate pleasure. So we have to learn how to relish this and also teach it to our children. I see the children are not inclined, except one nice boy here, he is sitting. Very good boy, you see, he is sitting. The other children, they have not been trained how to sit and hear Krishna Katha. They are thinking, this is not interesting. But with the proper training, the children will become very, very attracted to the topics of Krishna. And that will ensure that they have the best possible future of all futures that they could have. If as little children, they become very, very happy and eager to hear the topics of Krishna being discussed. So, we have to be the example for the children by ourselves, first of all. If we show the example, you see, then the children will follow in due course. If we ourselves become very, very eager to absorb in the Krishna Katha, the topics of the Lord, then they will see how much we are relishing, how much we are enjoying this nectar. And they will think, oh, it must be wonderful. If they're tasting so much nectar, let me also taste the nectar, you see. So in this way, instead of being swept away by a material man, we should be swept away by Krishna Katha, you see. Let my mind be carried away by the glories of Krishna. Let my mind be swept back to the spiritual world, you see, carried by the wave. As we were telling last night, we had an airline pilot last night in our program. And I was explaining to him that actually this is, our process is to fly on the mantra airplane, the airplane of transcendental sound vibration. We fly back to the spiritual sky. You see, we fly in the sky of spirit, the sky of Krishna, by this medium of transcendental sound vibration. And derive great happiness and satisfaction. Last night, everyone was going to see the fireworks. Even one of the people left our program last night to go to the fireworks, you see. But actually, if you tune in to Krishna Katha, you will have so many lights coming within your heart. Much more beautiful than what you can see at the fireworks display. So many lights of transcendental knowledge will start going off in your own heart, you see. That's a fact. And it's not just once a year, you know, for a couple of hours out there fighting off the mosquitoes in some park, you know. But it's 24/7. If you learn how to tune in to Krishna Katha, you will start to experience transcendental ecstasy 24/7, whether you're at home, whether you're at the temple, whether you're at work, wherever you may be. If you learn the art of how to tune in to Krishna, as is taught by the bona fide acharyas, you see. If you learn this art, you see, then you will live in transcendental bliss in all times, places, and circumstances. And even the moment of death won't disturb you. You'll understand, well, I'm just going from this room to that room, that's all. You see. It's a big house. It's like, this is a big house. You see. Krishna's house is even bigger. It includes the whole existence. That's Krishna's house. So, for one who has completely taken shelter in Krishna, has absorbed himself in Krishna consciousness, even death is not a disturbance. It just means I'm going from one room to the other, that's all. So this process of Krishna consciousness is very sublime, it is very wonderful. If we can learn from a bona fide spiritual master how to take shelter of Krishna, just as I had the very great opportunity to be trained by His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharja Astatara Satashishima Esi Bhakti Vedantati Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, the greatest acharya in Vaishnava history. You see, I had that very good fortune. And he told me, I must give this training to others. I must also become an acharya and give this knowledge as his order to me. So I have come here to land Atlanta to give what Prabhupada has given to me, to share it with you, you see, so that you can taste the same bliss that I am tasting in this transcendental Krishna consciousness. I don't like to see that anybody is unhappy in this world. So whatever, I know that someday I will die, today or tomorrow I will die and go to the next room. But while I'm here in this room, I want to enlighten everyone as much as possible in this science so that you can taste this nectar also. The nectar that Prabhupada has given me, I want you to also be able to taste this nectar. You see. So I'm not paid for doing this. My pay is to see you taste the nectar. That's how I get paid. The satisfaction of seeing you relishing this nectar of Krishna Katha. That is my pay. It's the best pay. I'm paid better than Bill Gates. You see. To see that you can actually taste the nectar of Krishna consciousness. That is my pay. So anyway, I'm very happy you invited me tonight so that I can inject your ears with Krishna Katha, the ultimate medicine to cure Bhava Rog, the disease of the repetition of birth and death. I'm very happy you have all come here to be injected. Did you know you were coming to the doctor's office to be injected? Actually, you're being injected with the ultimate medicine, Krishna Katha, through your ears, you see. And so we have the medicine, Krishna Katha, and we have the diet also, Krishna Prasad. So if you take the medicine through the ear, and you take the Prasad on your tongue, then you become cured of this disease, Bhava Rog. You can become cured from the repetition of birth and death and regain your original, eternal, blissful identity in the pastimes of the Supreme Person in the spiritual sky, where people never die, they never get old, they never have to pay tax, they don't have to worry about the price of gasoline. None of these anxieties, you see. Getting laid off, or this and that. No anxieties about getting old, getting sick, dying. There, the people are eternal youths. They're all like six. They're all like teenagers, 16 to 20 year old bodies, you see, in the prime of youth, simply enjoying eternally with Krishna and his transcendental pastime. So we can enter into that transcendental world just by becoming attracted to hearing about Krishna. We can enter that transcendental world. So kindly try to become addicted, attached to hearing the glories of Krishna, spoken from the mouth of Krishna's pure devotees. Pure means they don't adulterate the message. They present it just as it is in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and other authorized scriptures. They don't invent some concocted ideas about Krishna, that I'm Krishna, you're Krishna, and we're all Krishna. But they present Bhagavad Gita, they present Krishna exactly as he's described in the Bhagavad Gita, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of everyone, that we're all subordinate to him. So, that being said, I can ask if any of you have some questions. Yeah, this program of japa meditation is the most powerful means. By chanting this Hare Krishna mantra, and if you will charge your spiritual batteries every morning by chanting japa mala, as many malas as you can, we recommend at least 16. In the beginning it may not be practical, but until you get used to it. But if you will chant every morning, you rise every morning, take your bath, and before you take your breakfast, if you will sit down in your prayer room and you will chant Hare Krishna and Japa Mala beads. This is the recommended mantra given in the Kali Santarana Upanishad. This is the most powerful means. Are you chanting Hare Krishna Japa? All right. This is recommended in the Kali Santarana Upanishad as the most powerful means of bringing desires under control in this age of Kali, which is very most materialistic age. See, previously they would sit and they do yoga asanas and different things. Those were effective and more effective in previous ages when there wasn't all the distractions we have now. But now we're being constantly distracted. Television, internet, billboards, the atmosphere at our office. You know, the kids having to go out to public school and all the things they're dealing with is a huge burden of material energy we're dealing with. So in this age, when it is most materialistic, this is recommended as the most effective means, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. If you will spend some quality time every morning chanting the Maha Mantra, you will find that you enter into a spiritual plane of consciousness while you're chanting that mantra, which is beyond this material existence. And you will find that it doesn't make you incompetent in the material world, but it gives you a deeper vision of what actually is this material world. You will actually perceive how this material world is the energy of Krishna. It's the inferior energy of the Lord, and it serves a purpose in His service. So by developing that vision, then, and understanding how instead of trying to enjoy this for myself, if I can use this for the pleasure of God, all of this energy that's His energy, then you'll find that you're, instead of desiring desires that are based around yourself and your family members, which is our normal thing we do, you'll find your desires now become Krishna desires, Krishna-centered desires. Now that doesn't neglect you. That doesn't mean you're neglected and your family is neglected, because when you water the root of the tree, what happens? All the leaves and branches are nourished. When you feed your belly, every part of your body is nourished. So Krishna is like the root, Krishna is like the belly. So when you actually learn to make all of your desires aiming at the lotus feet of Krishna, then what happens is your desires are automatically satisfied, because you're satisfying the root of existence, Krishna or God, Bhagavan. So it's a very practical and effective system. By dovetailing ourselves with the pleasure of the Supreme Person, living for His pleasure and satisfaction, desiring His pleasure and satisfaction first and foremost. A rough example is the mother. She simply desires to please the children, isn't it? The mother's nature, she just wants her kids to be happy. That is her happiness. If she neglects her children, she'll never be happy. Because the mother's nature, she wants the children to be happy. So that's a rough example of actually Krishna is the original source of all existence, as He describes Himself in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text number 9. So if we can try to satisfy Krishna and always think about His satisfaction, then automatically we become satisfied, just like the mother always trying to satisfy the kids. So it's a very practical system. Try to do everything for Krishna's satisfaction. And Krishna asks us in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text number 14, that we should always be chanting His name. Of course, that's not practical in the modern day. I mean, you go to the office and the boss says, "How are you today?" And you go, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare." You may not last long on your job, you see, position. But our spiritual master, our founder Acharya, has blessed us that if we can do at least 16 times around the beads every day, that's as good as 24 hours chanting, you see. So we train our members how to fill that vow, to chant at least 16 rounds a day. And then they get the benefit of doing that sincerely, they get the benefit of 24 hours chanting. And so it's a very special blessing that Srila Prabhupada has given to us. That 16 rounds will give you the benefit of 24 hours a day of chanting, which is what Krishna actually said. So does that answer your question and help? Okay, good. I'm happy I can satisfy you. Anybody else? Yes?
Since you have personal association with Prabhupada, you have taken everything to heart, and you had nice devotees at that time, and you were following everything, all the instructions. But now, this generation, for example, for me, I listen to all the lectures, get association with the devotees, but these are like, take this side, leave it this side, you know? It's very difficult once I go out and follow the same thing with the heart. That sincerity is not...
So what's your question then? I understand your predicament, so now what is your question?
How to develop this love? How to get the kind of faith?
Well, it's simple. It's the same principle that I use. Now you can apply the same principle yourself, you see. The principle still works. Because I took the association of those who had strong faith, and that gave me strong faith. So now all you have to do is apply the same principle. You have to take the shelter and association of those who have strong faith.
Shelter, that's guru and senior Vaishnava, you see. And association, that's your peers. You have to find shelter and association from those who have strong faith. You do exactly what I did, and you'll get exactly the same result. You have to latch on to those who have great faith, who have very strong, who have unflinching faith. What is that verse? Yasya deve para bhaktir, tata deve tata guru, tasyaite katita hyarta prakashyante mahatmanah. Shetashvatar Upanishad. If one has unflinching faith in the words of the spiritual master and of Krishna, as spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, then all the Vedic wisdom becomes revealed to you. You will see everything exactly as it is. It's like when the sun rises in the morning. You can see everything. So you have to find those persons who have strong faith, and you have to take shelter of them. That's why you need a spiritual master also. You're initiated? Are you taking shelter yet of anyone? Not yet. So you need to find, just like I give shelter of my godbrothers, you see, we also have godbrothers who do. You take shelter of myself or one of the other of my godbrothers, who can then inject you with, by the mercy of Prabhupada, can inject you with strong faith, you see, in this process. That's called taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. And then by taking shelter, then gradually you can qualify yourself for initiation. And then you become fully empowered to be Krishna conscious and to spread Krishna consciousness in all times, places, and circumstances. So I would recommend you need to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, myself or one of the others who are initiating. And in this way, you can become very solid. You want to know, well, you got the advantage. Now I'm telling you how you can also get the advantage. It's called the parampara system. Prabhupada did the same thing. He took shelter of a bona fide spiritual master who did the same thing. He took shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. It's been going on for thousands of years. Krishna is the original guru. Brahma took shelter of him. Narada Muni took shelter of Brahma. Srila Vyasadeva took shelter of Narada Muni. Madhvacharya took shelter of Vyasadeva. And this way it's come down through the ages. So you can do exactly the same thing. It's available for you now. Evam parampara praptam ramam rajarsheyo vidu. Just as the saintly kings heard this knowledge and took shelter of the parampara, you can do the same thing. Right here today, the 5th of July 2008 in Atlanta, Georgia, you can do the same exact thing that the predecessors have done. You have just as much access to the transcendental existence as Arjuna on the battlefield when he was with Krishna. You may say, but I have my job and I have this and that. He also had his job. He was a warrior. He found that his job distracted him from Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he wanted to quit. But Krishna said, no, you can't quit your job. You go to work on Monday morning with your bow and arrow and do it for me. You see? Do it for my pleasure. So what does that mean for a working man in this world? When you get that paycheck, you shouldn't think it's my money. Think this is Krishna's money. I have to use it in a way that will please him. You see, that's what Arjuna did. Don't fight on my own behalf, now fight on behalf of Krishna. So you earn your living, you earn your livelihood. Don't think my household, my wife, my kids, my house. No, think this is Krishna's house. My wife belongs to Krishna. My kids belong to Krishna. I belong to Krishna. The house belongs to Krishna. So let me do everything for Krishna, you see. And then you find yourself on the transcendental platform. Just like Arjuna. He went to work on Monday morning and he rose to the top of his profession. You see, he didn't become incompetent by becoming a spiritualist. He became more competent by becoming a spiritualist. So I hope that answers your question. Okay, good. Questions, Mara? Everyone's completely satisfied? And I can go home and do some writing. Yeah?
Yesterday in the lecture you said out of your earnings, save something for future.
Yeah. You have to save, a householder has to save for future emergencies and for future things. Like maybe putting your kids through college, you know, retirement. See, the actual standard is I don't know if it's practical for you all, but the real standard is this. Let's say you, what is a typical monthly requirement for basic expenses? $5,000 a month, $4,000? You know, car payments, house payments. What's the tip, what's the real, what's like an average thing for somebody in this neighborhood per month? Anybody say? $5,000 a month? $10,000 a month? Five? Okay. So the ideal standard is, if you need $5,000 a month, you should earn $20,000 a month. That's the actually ideal standard in the Vedic culture. If you need $5,000 a month to cover your basic expenses, then you should figure out a way to earn $20,000 a month. Because then $5,000 you can cover with your expenses. $5,000 goes into retirement, into emergency fund, which means you can have a very early retirement. In Vedic culture, by age 50, you're supposed to be completely free of all material things, you know. Just imagine if you could, at the age of 25 to 50, you could put away $5,000 a month in investing then. How much money you would have in 25 years? $60,000 a year. What's 60,000 times 25? See, it's a... But with the interest, you'd probably have a... You'd have a lot of money. So the idea is you give $10,000 to the renunciates to help them push forward the Krishna consciousness movement, $5,000 for your future retirement, and $5,000 for your monthly overhead. That's considered the ideal program for a householder. So if it's not, if you can't do that, then do it, just, you know, realize that's the ideal and do whatever you can to get as close to it as you can. Yes.
As per your comments, if I earn 20,000, I don't have time to check.
That's the other side of it. Yeah. You don't want to. You don't want to over indebted. There are people who can earn $20,000 a month and still have time to chant Hare Krishna. It's a matter of your karma and, you know, different things. There are people who can do that. But if it's to the point where you have no time for sadhana, you're working like a dog 20 hours a day, then forget it. You know, just be Krishna conscious and send, depend on Krishna to somehow maintain you. That's the other side of it, see. The most important thing is you can chant 16 rounds every day and have time to read and have time to go to the temple. I mean, don't become an absolute workaholic, you know, working 80 hours a day. Some companies, I mean, $80 hours a week, I mean, you know, 80 hours a day, you couldn't do that. But there are companies that want you to work 80 hours a week. It's better not, they call them sweatshops, at least they used to. You don't want to work for a sweatshop. 40 hours a week is actually, Prabhupada mentioned in his books. I don't know how many people are doing that nowadays. It's pretty, you get a 40-hour week job, you're doing pretty good. It pays well. And they usually expect more hours, for, you know. Are you getting 40 a week? You're a contractor, though. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the real thing is this. If you surrender to Krishna, then he will arrange everything. I know when I was a brahmachari for 14 years, that I don't think I told this to you all yet, but then I got married to Vishnupriya Manaji here, and we were instructed by the temple leaders that all those who are married, they should be ideal examples, and they should all get jobs and donate to the temple. Should be an ideal grihastha. By working your job, earning your money, covering your expenses, and donating to the temple every month, monthly donors. So I did that. But the only problem was, I, as a brahmachari, I was used to going to Mangal Arati every day at the temple. And I was determined, and I've actually maintained it my whole life. But now I had a job, and they said, okay, the hours are from 11 at night till 8 in the morning. Did I tell this last night? I did? I didn't, okay. So how am I going to go to Mangal Arati every day? I've got to report to work at 11 o'clock at night, I get up at 8 in the morning. But Krishna covered me, because I really had a strong desire to go to Mangal Arati. They said, well, you know, nobody wants to work this shift. You can take an extra long lunch break if you want to every night, no problem. You know, hour, hour and a half, we don't mind.
because no one wants to work this shift. I was just babysitting some computer jobs, you know, to make sure they didn't get errors. I had to check the printouts every now and then, make sure there was no errors, and I had to call the programmers in to fix the bugs, you know. So I was just babysitting these huge programs running on big mainframe. You know, that's all I was really doing. So they said, yeah, you could take make it an hour and a half for lunch, no problem. So I went to Mangalarti every day during lunch break. I would drive back to the apartment, pick up Manaji, take her to the temple, attend Mangalarti, and then go back in time to finish the second half of my shift. And then I would catch the Bhagavatam class, the tail end of the Bhagavatam class after I got off of work. So if you're really determined to be Krishna conscious, to chant 16 rounds, Krishna will give you a way that you can cover your material necessities and have time for sadhana also. That's the thing. That's my personal experience. That's confirmed in the books, and it's my personal experience also. I didn't want to give up Mangalarti, and I never had to. Even when I was working the night shift. Even when I was working job, even on day shift, then I still went. And I would get up, have a good morning program, and then I would have to leave class a little early to get to work on time. But I've always had a good morning program, whether I was a brahmachari, whether I was a grahastha. Now I'm vanaprastha. It's easier as a vanaprastha, retired life. But in India, in all positions, if you're determined to be Krishna conscious, Krishna will help you to do that. He'll give you what he will cover your material necessities. If you're sincere to be his devotee, he will give you a means to earn your living in such a way that you can cover your needs, not be in debt, and at the same time be Krishna conscious. He owns everything. He controls everything. He can easily arrange for you. You just have to be desired to be Krishna conscious. That's all. And then Krishna will cover everything else. Yeah.
Maharaj, I've heard that this prarabdha karma,
what kind of karma?
Prarabdha karma.
Previous karma.
Yeah, some devotees say that even after taking initiation, that particular prarabdha karma doesn't get removed. You have to face it.
Okay, so what is the question then? The question is that true or not?
Yeah, Maharaj, you said like Krishna takes care of material and spiritual, right? But this karma has to be faced.
I can answer your question. I understand the question. Does previous karma get erased at the time of initiation, or does it not get erased? The answer is yes and no. 99% of it is erased. That's why it's said that it is erased. But there is a slide. It's like, turn the fan on. Okay. All right, now see this fan blade. This is the fan blade of karma. Now unplug it. Or turn it off, same thing, yeah. Now look, it's still going, you see. Even though the electricity is off, the blade is still turning. You see, and gradually coming to a stop. So when you take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, you turn off, you disconnect yourself from the karmic powerhouse. So you've stopped, but there's still some residual action of the previous momentum that continues. So your karma is taken, absorbed by the spiritual master, but you're given a token reaction just to help you to be sober on this pathway. You don't get the full reactions of your previous sins after you take shelter of Guru by Diksha. But you do get some token reactions to help you to become very sober and serious and to stay fixed on this pathway. That's a fact. It's only a 1%, not the 99%, or not the 100%. Questions, Mar? Yeah.
When pure devotees get diseases like cancer.
Pure devotees do what?
Get cancer.
Okay.
How do we understand that?
If a pure devotee gets cancer, how do we understand that? Well. Time and tide wait for no man. Every body must sooner or later die. That is the law of nature. It's not that I become a pure devotee, I won't die. I won't get sick and get old and won't die. Those things will happen. A devotee sees that as the mercy of Krishna. If I'm stricken with some disease,
the devotee, he will see that if a devotee is stricken with disease, he will see that as Krishna's mercy. Krishna is blessing me with this cancer, he's blessing me with this problem or that problem to help me become more sober and more fixed in my determination to take shelter of his lotus feet. What is that verse? Tatainu kampamsu samikshamano punjana evatma kutang vabakam tadvagvapur vir vidadang namaste jiveti yo muktis padesa dayabak. My dear Lord, those persons who were constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon them, who continue suffering the reactions for their past misdeeds while they constantly offer you respectful obeisances from within the innermost core of their hearts, are certainly eligible candidates for liberation. Indeed, it has become their rightful claim. So if a devotee is afflicted by cancer, he thinks, Krishna, thank you. Thank you for this blessing. Whatever, you're helping me to burn off the reactions from my past misdeeds. Thank you, Krishna. If a devotee is in that mood, he's already freed from the cancer. He's not even living in that body anymore. Even though his soul may be sitting in it, he's no longer connected with it. He's completely detached from his bodily pain, his cancer disease. You see? You understand? Questions more? Yes. Yeah, what about the?
If one is not able to earn 20,000 easily, why would one want to live in that luxury?
Live where?
Live in that luxury.
Why would they want to?
Yeah.
Well, generally they do. The rich people become very addicted to luxury.
No, I'm saying if one is not able to earn 20,000 and follow the 50% and 25% saving, then why would they want to live in that luxury?
Maybe they don't. You think they do?
Sometimes they do.
Yeah.
And then they spend their all their time working hard.
Oh, I see. You're saying that people have a desire to be luxurious, so they work like dogs to get that Mercedes and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That's
Would that be
Krishna says, Bhagaishvarya prasaktanam taya prahittate tasam vavisayatmaka buddhir samadana vidyate. For those who are attached to material opulence, to sense gratification and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service under the Supreme Lord does not take place. So that means they haven't been well trained from the childhood. They thought material opulence was the goal of life. And they spent all their energy trying to get material opulence, not realizing it's nothing more than the will of the wisp. It's just an illusion, material opulence. The happiness of material opulence is illusory happiness. It doesn't actually satisfy the soul.
My point was that if a person who wants to be Krishna conscious, why would they want to live? Just like there was a question.
No, he doesn't. A Krishna conscious person.
Many times the devotee lives in a luxury way and they're not able to support the temple, they're not able to save us, many of them. And that was a question one time.
So, what is the. I don't understand the question.
So, I'm saying if there is a. Whatever one's limit is, one should live in that situation and then one should serve the Lord and chant their rounds and become Krishna conscious, not that they should aspire for something.
Yeah, that's common sense. One should live according to one's means, not be, you know, not by maxing out your credit card.
I remember there was one time devotees were saying that a person who is making, it was you who were giving lecture at that time, and the devotee said, you know, the expenses are this much. You know,
speak up.
Apartments are so expensive.
Yeah.
So one devotee was saying that why would one want to live in an expensive apartment if they cannot earn that much?
Yeah, so where will they live then?
They should find something cheaper.
Okay, is it? What if the cheapest thing is expensive? That's sometimes the situation. Modern day America, sometimes the cheapest thing is very expensive also.
Well, it depends. I'm just saying this was an example.
So is your question answered? Your legs beyond your what?
Spread your sheet and beyond the sheet. You just should spread your legs and spread your
beyond the what?
Sheet.
Sheet?
Yeah, the bed.
Oh,
sheet.
Okay. Yeah.
So one should live according to one's means, not extravagantly, and try to work hard and go for two.
Well, the principle is you live comfortably but not extravagantly. That is the principle. Extravagance, that should be for the deities. The tendency we have to be extravagant, we should repose that in the deity. I'm sewing beautiful outfits for the deities, beautiful, offering wonderful flowers, beautiful, beautiful flower garlands to the deities. We should bestow all opulence upon the deities. You see, the temple deities should be given the most opulent, beautiful clothing, beautiful everything. Very luxurious and opulent. That's where the opulence should be bestowed upon the Lord. That will purify our desire for opulence. We give it to Krishna. Yeah. Beautiful temple, you know. Beautiful, opulent temple. Where people can come and become inspired to dedicate themselves in the service of the Lord. That will solve all the problems of the world, all the poverty, all the crime, the terrorism. If people become inspired in God consciousness, all these problems will go away automatically. Any other questions? Yes?
If I become, let's say, Krishna conscious and slowly becoming happier than before, I may develop an inherent ego, I'm afraid that. I may develop an inherent ego that I'm happier than other people, and I may feel instead pity rather than feeling mercy for them.
Well, actually, if you become Krishna conscious, you will become happier than other people. That's a fact. And you should be merciful and help them to become happy too.
If I develop an ego that says, okay, I'm happier than that person.
Oh, no, that's just a reality. That's not, that's a scientific fact.
Yeah,
if you become Krishna conscious.
His question is that he will develop a false ego and
I'm if you don't preach, yes, you will. If you don't share this happiness with them, then you will become proud, develop a false sense of pride. That's why you must share the happiness that you are tasting. You must share it. Otherwise you will become proud, and that will be your downfall. Therefore, whatever you have realized, that you must share. You must find a way to share this with others. And then you have to be in the mood of a humble servant. You shouldn't think I am greater than the others because I have this happiness. You just think I'm more fortunate, that's all. You should think that if they were Krishna conscious, they would be better devotees than me because I see they have better work habits than I do, they have better discipline skills than I do, they're more intelligent than me. You should always see that other people are more qualified than you. Think that, well, if they only had Krishna conscious, they'd be 100 times better devotee than I am. So let me give them Krishna consciousness. Somehow I have this good fortune to be Krishna conscious. Now let me share it with them as their humble servant. In this mood, if you don't preach, yeah, you will become proud. That's it. Therefore, you must preach. You must share this Krishna consciousness with the world. That's it. Yes.
In this modern world, this modern days, how can we implement this principle of plain living, my thinking?
How can you adopt it?
In this modern days, modern day.
Live as simply as possible, that's all.
How do we know that we're living simply?
Huh?
How do we know that we're living simply?
If you have time for Krishna consciousness, then you're doing all right. Just like how much you should eat. You eat enough to keep body and soul together. That's all. Don't eat extravagantly and start, you know, start putting on 10 pounds, 20 pounds, 30 pounds, become a 250-pound butterball. You see, that's extravagant. You eat what you need to be healthy and energized. And the same thing with all your other material necessities, you see. You know, you don't need to get a Rolls Royce car, you see. Toyota is a good car, a Honda, you know, something like that. That's all right, but you don't need to get a Rolls Royce car. Not required. Custom-made Rolls-Royce, you know, leather seats. Not required. You can, in this way, it's common sense. You don't need to live in a palace. You can just live in a nice, simple home. Clean, nicely built home is sufficient. You don't need to live in a marble palace. Of course, if you make a marble palace for Krishna and you live there as his servant, that you can do. That is all right. If you make a beautiful marble palace for Krishna and you live there as his humble servant, that can be done. That is not extravagant. Personal extravagant. Does that answer your question? Any other question? Vaishnava aparad means when you are disrespectful to Vaishnavas. One must never disrespect Vaishnavas. If you're disrespectful, then you are aparadhi. Vaishnava aparadhi. Offended against the Vaishnava. The Vaishnavas are the life and soul of a devotee. Someone who is actually Krishna conscious, the Vaishnavas are her very life and soul. He would never dream of ever disrespecting a Vaishnava. They are his very life and soul. So if I disrespect a Vaishnava, I'm acting as a non-Vaishnava. I'm not acting as a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava never disrespects another Vaishnava. He sees all as Krishna's representative. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastre Kai. Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hai. Chaitanya Charitamrita states that the sadhus, the Vaishnavas, even by 1/11th of a second association with a Vaishnava, one can achieve all perfection. All the scriptures declare that even one moment's association with a Vaishnava can give all perfection. So why would I want to be disrespectful to a person who can give me all perfection by one moment's association? I'd be a fool to do that. You see? So anytime we're disrespectful to a devotee, that's Vaishnava Parama. Never disrespect Vaishnava. Never. Under any circumstance. Even if a Vaishnava disrespects me, I should think, I deserve this. This is Krishna's mercy. But we should never be disrespectful in return.
What is the remedy for them? If I did offense,
I have to beg them. If you offend a Vaishnava, the only remedy is you have to beg their forgiveness. It's the only remedy. Krishna will never forgive you unless they forgive you. That's the only remedy. My dear Prabhu, my dear Mataji, please forgive me. I was rude to you. I was disrespectful. I'm so sorry I did that. Please forgive me. Humbly beg them. That's the only remedy. There's no other remedy. Otherwise, your spiritual life is doomed. Krishna will never accept you as a devotee if you offended his devotee. Never. Questions more?
With the increase in the gasoline prices, the petroleum, it may become very difficult for you and other
What is he saying?
He says the price of the petroleum has increased, so it maybe becomes very difficult for the gurus to travel and preach.
No. If necessary, I will take ox cart and sailboat. I will continue my preaching, world preaching. And if I had to take ox cart and sailboat, I will do. I will not give up this traveling and preaching for Krishna.
But it will be tough that you may have a personal association with missing with your disciples.
Yes, that way I will meet with my disciples. And once you've actually met a bona fide spiritual master, you've taken shelter of him by initiation, then, after you have personally met him, then he can become fully manifest also to you in the form of his teachings. So even in his physical absence, just like someone wrote me, they said, every time I read your emails, I feel that you're present. He was amazed. How is it? And I explained to him, actually, the spiritual master, he is more powerfully present in his vibrational presence, in the form of his instructions, than he is in his physical presence. That is the most powerful manifestation of the spiritual master. Even more powerful than his physical presence is his teachings, his vibrational presence. So as long as there's enough petrol to get around, I will use it. You see? I'll continue flying as long as there's at least one airline that's still surviving. They expect many of them will go out of business. That's the prediction. They won't be able to. This many airlines won't be able to, because of what's going to happen. They expect the airlines. We'll see what the predictions come true. Of course, if everybody started driving electric cars, then there would be enough fuel for the airplane. But they have to come up with affordable electric cars. They haven't done that yet. But it's possible in a few years they could have affordable electric cars that'll go 500 miles on a charge, or even 200 miles is sufficient.
Yeah, everybody stops driving their car and they have their jobs nearby. There is a lot of petrol.
That's the other thing. We're going to have to start, urban planning is going to have to go through some major revisions. We're going to have to work close to our, they're going to have this whole thing that businesses and homes can't be near each other. This mentality has to change. I know in my wife's family, they lived, it was all in one unit. The commute to the office was, 20 feet. They had a storefront. You'd come into the shop off the store, furniture store. You go behind the furniture store, there's the living quarters, and you go behind the living quarters, and there's the factory. The manufacturers of furniture. It's all in one location. The factory, the residence and the store all in one location. So nowadays we frown on that in America. Oh, that's old-fashioned. But actually that's cutting edge for the future economy. You see, that's that sort of arrangement is cutting edge. When you have the office and the residence all. And I remember when I was a boy, there was a gas station we used to go to sometimes. You pull into the gas station and they were sitting in their living room. People owned the gas station. The gas station was there in their front yard. And you pull in, they come off, they'd be sitting there eating dinner, and they get up from the dinner table to fill your tank for you. There's no self-serve in those days. I remember distinctly the house and the gas station, it was all in one unit. So now we think that's barbaric. You know, but actually, it's very practical. Gradually, we're going to have to move in that direction. To where, you can have a business in your house. Now the zoning doesn't allow you to have a public, to open up a computer consultant company here upstairs and have a sign out in your front yard. It's considered taboo. You can't do it. The zoning restrictions won't allow it. The deed restrictions won't allow them. But things are going to have to change. I know the last job I had, I was running a little business right out of our ashram. Over the telephone, and I didn't have to go anywhere. I had a 20-second commute. So, we really, it's crazy how people are commuting, 2 hours, 3 hours to work. It's insane. The way we've set up, we've based a whole culture on unlimited petroleum. It's foolish. A whole culture has been based on this idea of unlimited petroleum. It's stupid. It shows if you're not Krishna conscious, then you act like a fool. Even in material things, you become foolish. They build a whole civilization on the principle of unlimited petroleum, knowing full well it's limited. I mean, that's foolish. It shows you the people who are running the culture, the society, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. So now they're going to be forced to become more practical. You know, I was just in New Zealand. I said last night, yeah, that $8 a gallon they're paying over them. $8 a gallon. In the UK, $10 a gallon equivalent. You know, $10 a gallon. Yeah. That's another thing. When I was a kid, every family had one car and that was it. That was it. Now every family has, you know, every member of the family has a car. If somebody had two cars, they would consider, wow, they must be really rich. They have two cars. You see, now we have set up a society in a way, because we were not Krishna conscious, we set up a society in a way that was very foolish. And now we're going to have to start to do something to change the way we live. We don't. How many children know how to take an ox and a bull? I mean, how many children are being taught in the schools how to take care of a cow and a bull? They don't teach that in the schools. They don't teach in elementary school, middle school, high school, college. Nowhere are any children being taught, practically nowhere, are they being taught how to have a farm, how to cover your maintenance by growing your own food and milking your own cow. But these things have to be taught in the school. Because if you have your own farm, 100 years ago in this country, the whole culture in India also, all over the world, self-sufficient farming was the basis of the world economy. Every family had their little plot. They were growing their own food. And you would have as many kids as you could because they would get out there in the field and do the harvest. Nowadays, kids are a deficit because all the bills of college, you know, therefore they kill the children by abortion. But formerly, the more you had kids, the more you had it made, because they would all go out and work the fields. The harvest time, plant the crops. The kids would help you take care of the cows, all the things. There's a whole family. You have a big family, means you have a big, you can have a lot of, it was an asset to have a lot of children formerly. People would have big families. But now, this whole culture, we want to have sex for the pleasure, but kill the children, kill the children, kill the children. And this is all our karmic reaction now. We have, because of past pious activities, we're getting all this opulence. But because now we're using it in a sinful way, it's being gradually taken away. But if we take up Krishna consciousness now very seriously, then we won't lose it. Krishna will keep us in this nice, powerful country where there's so much opulence. If we use this opulence now for Krishna, we can convince the American people to use this opulence for Krishna. This country will maintain its leadership role on this planet. It's a powerful leading country on this planet. But if we simply use it to kill the children and kill the cows like we're doing now, this country is just going to become, it's going to deteriorate. It'll fall apart gradually. Every other empire, the Greeks fell apart, the Romans, the French, the Spanish, the British Empire, this empire will also be finished. And who knows what will come. The Muslims have their plan to become the world power. And that wouldn't be very conducive for Krishna consciousness. So we should be very, very keen now to become Krishna conscious and spread it. Because in this way, if Krishna consciousness can, you know, we can reintroduce the Vedic culture on this planet, and the whole world can become peaceful and prosperous. Everybody will be happy. We can live in peace and prosperity throughout the whole world. So therefore I'm asking all of you, kindly give your energy to become Krishna conscious and spread it. Let's work together to revolutionize this planet so that everybody can live in peace and prosperity throughout the whole world. No poverty, no crime, no terrorism, you see. Even disease and the weather will, disease will go down to the minimum, the weather will get better, everything will become better if we can make Krishna the center. We put God back in the center of our lives, where He's meant to be 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in all times, all places, and all circumstances. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, we all are part and parcel of Krishna.
We are all part and parcel of Krishna, okay?
And who is non-Vaishnava?
Everyone is Vaishnava. They just don't know it, that's all. Everyone is Krishna's devotee. They just have forgotten, that's all. So now we have to revive their memory by showing the example ourselves of how wonderful it is to be a devotee of Krishna, how ecstatic it is to be Krishna conscious. If you build a better mousetrap, what'll happen? They say if you build a better mousetrap, the whole world will be the pathway to your door. So we have the better mousetrap. We have Krishna consciousness. So if we can learn how to become purely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the whole world will come to us wanting to know how they can also do it. The problem is we're still hovering on the neophyte platform, battling it out with our material desires. That's the problem. But if we can become pure Vaishnavas, the whole world will come begging, please tell me how I can do it too. They'll all come begging to us. What you have is what I want. Please tell me how I can get it too. It's an exciting life to be Krishna conscious. There's nothing more exciting. So our time has run out. And we thank you all very much for so kindly hearing. Raja Vidrashi Mad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.